Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices. This evening, we have two very special guests on the phone with us. In fact, we have three very special guests, Vicki Noble and Genevieve Vaughn, both of whom are devoting their lives to bringing back the wisdom of the goddess and the mother, and are helping us to remember that once upon a time, we humans lived in gratitude and harmony with the earth and with each other, without war, without money, where all life was considered sacred, and where we knew we were all children of one great mother. May that life be restored. And we also have on the phone with us Genevieve's daughter,
Amelia.
Amelia, thank you so much. Vicki Noble is a feminist shamanic healer, author, scholar, and wisdom teacher. Born in 1947 and raised in Iowa, she awakened to the goddess and women's spirituality on her arrival in Berkeley, California in 1976. Through a shamanic healing crisis, she opened psychically to the healing, art, yoga, and divination processes that led to the creation of her book, Mother Peace. Since then, she has written several books, developed a powerful ritual healing process, taught and lectured internationally, and led tours of women on pilgrimage to sacred goddess sites around the world. Vicki has raised two daughters, Robin and Brooke, and lives with her special son, Aaron Eagle, who was the subject of her book, Down is Up for Aaron Eagle. In Mother Peace, Vicki Noble challenges us to celebrate our ancient peaceful heritage and to reclaim our right as a people to a life without war. The book is a vision of hope and transformation, made even more powerful by the vibrant pictorial images of the 78 Mother Peace Tarot cards. Vicki taught for 2 decades in the women's spirituality programs at California Institute of Integral Studies, then New College, and finally at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, which changed its name to SOPHIA 2 years ago. Vicki writes, I have a large and dynamic following of independent students in Italy, where I go to teach twice a year. They are practitioners of the Tibetan Buddhist Dakini practices I have adopted for women who are largely not Buddhist, but need a spiritual method for centering and grounding in female power. Welcome, Vicki.
Oh, thank you, Janie.
So glad to finally get your voice on Women's Voices.
Yeah, me too.
The first question I ask my guests, considering that this is Women's Voices, is what part did your own mother play in your becoming the wise and accomplished woman that you are today?
Well, my mother is an Aries, and I am too, so I suppose there was an imprint, you know, of independence and a certain kind of feistiness, and the other thing that I discovered, I didn't really think of this when I was younger, but when I started to make the Mother Peace tarot cards in the late 1970s, I remembered that my mother was a card shark and totally showed me how to play cards and how to shuffle and all that. But also, she taught me things about nature. I think without even making a big deal out of it in any way, she taught me little old wives' tales, I suppose you would say, or old traditions, you know, stamping, licking my thumb, stamping my palm, and making a wish when we saw a white horse along the road, or, you know, those kinds of things, little superstitions, they would be called now. But in fact, when I started to become more pagan in my religious practices, I realized that my mother had kind of already been there, although she would never have called herself a pagan, I'm sure. So I appreciate her input, you know.
Well, that must have been wonderful to awaken to that and realize that she had
to
been
remember,
there.
Yeah, and put her in that light. Yeah. And she loved it when I told her.
Well, I bet she did, of course. Did you have sisters and brothers?
I have two younger sisters, just 3 and 4 years younger than me. And then I have a baby brother who was born when I was 17. I sort of practiced on him. And when I was 19, I had my first daughter. Kind of like my mother had done, got the parenting thing done early. It was terrific because I had no idea who I was or what I was doing here. And it served to give me a few years of really vibrant creativity in response, you know, to being a mother and having these little babies. And I had a really creative experience as a young mother. Although I was married to an Air Force officer, so it was quite bizarre, and I didn't stay in that for more than 5 years. But at the time, at least, the parenting part was quite delicious.
And it sounds as if there wasn't that much strife at home.
It was a constant battle. I cut my feminist teeth battling relationship, trying to get something to happen, you know.
Thank you. Genevieve Vaughn is an independent researcher born in Texas who now lives in both Texas and Italy, and who has given vast amounts of money away to women to further the work of social change. She has been working on the theory of a maternal gift economy as an alternative to patriarchal capitalism for many years. Among her books are Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange, and Women and the Gift Economy, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible, and Homo Donans, and a film on her life, Giving for Giving. Genevieve writes, "Gift giving exists in many places, but is made invisible by patriarchal capitalism. Two basic economic paradigms coexist in the world today. One is visible, the other invisible. One highly valued, the other undervalued. One is connected with men, the other with women, causing a basic shift in the values by which we direct our lives and policies. The gift paradigm has the advantage of restoring mothering to its rightful place in the constitution of the human, what has been wrongly proposed in the construction of gender, with devastating effects such as the promotion of the values of dominance, competition, and hierarchy, which are non-nurturing values, can be countered by reintroducing gift-giving as a social value and interpretive key. Both male and female human beings are basic nurturers. One gender is not the binary opposite of the other. If we introduce the gift paradigm into our interpretation of the world, we will find our gift giver within, which will then be validated." Genevieve has organized and spoken and presented papers in many women's and matriarchal conferences and other events around the world, and continues on this journey. In 1992, she created a temple to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet near the nuclear test site in the Nevada desert. This beautiful temple is still in existence and open to visitors. We will be talking about that temple soon. Genevieve is the mother of three beautiful daughters. And now for a bit of music before I bring Jen up. We are going to listen. We are Walking in a Circle, composed and performed by Genevieve Vaughn.
We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving one another. We are crossing the divide. We are walking with our mother and our sisters by our side. We're a circle in a spiral that's evolving towards the light. We're a bridge are straight and we are gay, liberating generations at the dawn of a new day. We are dancing in a circle, we are dancing all around. We are dancing in a circle to create a higher ground. We're embracing one another as we're spinning round the sun. And we love Earth, our mother, and all creation. We are walking in a circle, we are walking hand in hand, we are walking in a circle to create the promised land, to create the promised land.
Beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful.
Really, it's just such a lovely song. I sing an obbligato above it with my hand raised up in the air. It just makes me want to, you know, reach to the heavens.
Great.
Wow. All right, so Genevieve, what part did your mother play in your becoming the far-sighted gifter and bringer of a new way that you have become?
Well, you know, I think she, listening to Vicki's story about her mother, I think my mother did also have a kind of fantasy, an ability to imagine, oh, fairies and things like that put her in a realm of a bit more or less mundane things than you might otherwise have thought, knowing her. A lot of our family is Irish, and she inherited from her aunts and her other relatives lots of stories from Ireland and about mystical things, and so that she passed that on to me. She was a very much an organizational woman, and she got a lot of things done, and she was also smart and liked things that were sort of culturally refined. But my mother died when she was 51, and I was 23, and so it was a really shock and a loss.
Of course.
And I didn't. I mean, I've spent most of my life without her, and her death also influenced me. I think, you know, to try to be the best I could be. She was always also wanting me to be a success, and I had a lot of fights with her, and wanted to be a success in my own way, which I ended up being more than in her way. But still, I think underneath it all was her strength of character, let's say.
Uh-huh. Sounds like you, in a way, wanted to carry her banner forward, too.
Well, in a way, it was wanting to carry women's banner, because I felt she did not get to realize herself as a woman, as a beyond, or as a an intellectual, let's say, or somebody with some experience beyond just the household. So, I mean, she certainly had a lot of friends and was involved in a lot of things, but I think she could have then much more, and she died just before feminism really started, and she died like on March the 7th, and March the 8th is International Women's Day. So I always thought that was kind of symbolic, that that she just didn't live long enough to get involved in feminism. Ask Amelia what her mother's influence on
well,
her was.
Well, that's a very interesting, Amelia.
Well, I will tell you if you ask me.
I'm asking.
Okay. Well, my mother brought us up with a lot of really nice stories. She would tell us these stories that she could read from a book, but actually she made up a lot of stories. And she was very creative and had episodes, one after the other, that she would just tell us from the top of her mind. And we used to have this appointment every night for story time, and she would just be so creative, you know, from the stories she told. And later on in life, she always has been very, very creative, and, you know, she's written 2 books and also, and you know, written some music that we just heard. And also one thing that she did which really impressed me was that she kept her promise to the goddess to make the temple in Nevada. And it was because a promise that she made when I was born. So she finally made the temple to the goddess, Sekhmet, and the temple is standing. And we just went to a beautiful celebration and at the temple. She sort of influenced me in a way of how to keep a promise.
You bring it into fruition.
Yes.
I can imagine she was a wonderful mom.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
But the promise was, when Amelia was conceived, not just when she was born, but when she was conceived, the promise I made to the goddess.
If I get pregnant, I'll build a temple to you.
Right.
And she did. And also, it may be a small temple in material way, but over the years, it has grown in followers, which I have seen because I've been there, you know, from the start, that it was a little experiment, basically, then now there's a big following of people who are devoted to the goddess Sekhmet and who really cherish that little temple.
Thank you. That's lovely. Jen, I've wondered why you chose to place the temple in that place of violence.
After I had made the promise to the goddess when I was in Egypt, it must have been 1965, I guess. I got pregnant almost immediately. I looked for a long time for a place to do the temple. And I also, it was a long time ago, and I was living in Italy, and at the time I really didn't have the guts to do a goddess temple in Italy. And then I came back to the U.S. in 1983 and was involved in the peace movement. And I went to Nevada to protest against the nuclear test site. And I thought that was really a great place to build a goddess temple, because it's a place to take a stand for life, for fertility of human beings and of the planet. And Sekhmet did grant me the pregnancy, and so it was a place to nurture life-giving and birth-giving. And in contrast to all of the negative energy of the nuclear test site. So for quite a while, at least a year, I looked there in the desert if I could find a place for the temple. And finally, some land came up for sale, and I bought it. It's not immediately by the test site, because there's not anything there outside of the test site. There is a town in the site itself called Mercury, But outside, there's nothing. And this is about 10 miles away, but it's quite close in the direction the crow flies. And so I got this land and donated it back to the Western Shoshone, whose land that area was. All of that area, including the test site, belonged to them. And so I donated the land back to them, and then they allowed me to have the temple there. Yeah. It is a place where we can take a stand for peace in front of not only the nuclear test site, but now there are several Air Force bases there, also where they are doing the drones, testing the drones, and it's really a area of war, and it's very important to have a location of peace there. People do peace walks out to the test site. The Franciscans come from Las Vegas. They walk all the way out there from Las Vegas every Easter.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And they walk all the way to the test site, which is 60 miles or something from Las Vegas. And they stop at the temple and rest there on their way.
Is there anything else?
The Native Americans come there too. And there is quite a community of people who come to the temple for ceremonies. And that happens on all of the holy days and all of the full moons and new moons and so forth. So we have quite a constituency of people who over the years, as Amelia says, have made that a central point, and that's been a good thing.
Yes. Is there a little town nearby?
Yeah, there is Indian Springs.
That's right.
It's about 2 miles away.
Okay, so you're just...
Yeah, and that's the place where all of the military bases have their...
Oh, dear.
Not headquarters, but anyway, they're kind of based around there.
Really? I just one little question before we go on to talking about the ceremony itself. How old were you? You were young when you had Amelia.
Yeah, I was... 27, maybe, something like that.
How would you know anything? How did you know anything about Sekhmet? How did you know about goddesses?
I didn't. I went on a trip with my husband to Egypt, and I didn't know anything about Sekhmet, but I was wanting to get pregnant. I mean, I hadn't gotten pregnant. We'd been married for a couple of years, and I hadn't gotten pregnant yet. And so we had a guide that we were in Luxor, and the guide took us around, and he took us down these stairs, and at the bottom of the stairs there was this goddess seated, a statue, and the guide said, you know, if you want to get pregnant, women who want to get pregnant make the goddess a promise, and they get pregnant. So I thought, well, I'll do that.
Well, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, little did he know.
Little did he know, or maybe, you know, I thought maybe women do that quite a bit, You know, I've actually heard of somebody else from Italy who's, I think, grandmother asked Sekhmet for a grandchild, and she got one.
Regarding the recent celebration that was held there and why it was and all of that.
Okay, well, Vicki, do you want to start? Because I've been talking all this time.
Well, I guess, even though it's your adventure that I'm so lucky to be included in. For me, it was an invitation from Jen to come and celebrate the installation of a new Sekhmet statue, because the earlier one had been stolen from the temple. It was stolen in April of this year, and a lot of us who are on two different lists and communicate a lot about goddess issues and subjects, the matriarchal studies list and the gift economy list, both of which Jen is active on. And so we were upset, of course, because there was this unexpected violation to the temple. The priestess at the temple, Candace, felt that it was probably kids, and it probably wasn't a terribly antagonistic gesture, but you never know. And so so Jen had a new statue created, bigger, stronger, going to be stuck to the earth forever, and invited a lot of us to come to the temple and share in her installation and in the celebrations around that. And it was in early August, the 10th of August. So so that, you go ahead, Jen. That's how.
Okay,
I...
yeah. A friend of mine had made the original statue, Marcia Gomez, and that was wonderful. We had that there from 1993, I think, on. And Marcia later died, so it was a shame that her statue got stolen. Anyway, we needed another statue, and actually the community put together the money to buy a new statue, to have the new statue made.
Uh-huh.
And Candace went and got it and brought it, had it brought there. So that was, you know, quite exciting that all that happened. And then a number of us came. A few of us I invited, and others came on their own. And we had quite a group there because there is a following of the temple. I go there rarely, but because I'm in Italy a lot of the time. But there were, at the first evening, there were maybe 40 or 50 priestesses, women, doing the ritual, which was fantastic, I thought.
Absolutely, and beautiful. It was amazing.
Yeah.
These are very dedicated practitioners, and the ritual was just beautiful.
Could you describe it in some way? I know you were all wearing red long gowns.
And the temple has a fire pit in the middle, and so the fire was burning. There was a
liturgy, where
prayers put up beforehand by that it was organized by a woman named Candace Kant, and she put the words there for people to take and speak. And so as we went around the group, the different people spoke various words of Sekhmet and about Sekhmet. And so that was, it was just totally beautiful.
Could I interrupt one moment?
Yeah.
And could you tell me, I know the inscription on the base of Sekhmet is so beautiful. I forgot to write it down.
Yeah, it is, may women be strong as a lion giving birth to the future. Because Sekhmet is the goddess with the lion's head, a woman's body and a lion's head.
Uh-huh.
And I actually read around a lot about Sekhmet as a birth goddess, or as a goddess of fertility, and there's not much about that. Huh. But there was something about her being the goddess that helps women give birth. And that was why we put that that inscription under the statue. Now, that has to be redone for this statue. It hasn't gotten put there yet, but it will be.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it enlarges birth from the individuals to the whole society,
mm-hmm.
basically, to giving birth to a better world.
Wow, that's lovely. Okay, well, I interrupted you as you were describing, so please continue.
There are a lot of really beautiful names of Sekhmet that were translated by a man named Robert Masters, and are in a book of her, about her, that he wrote. And so a lot of those words were used. And it was also based on some work by a woman named Normandy Ellis, who has written books about ancient Egypt. And one of the interesting things, I think, is that back in those days when I decided to do this, or when I made this promise, there was not a goddess movement that I knew anything about, and nobody knew anything about Sekhmet. And now there's lots of people who pay attention to that particular goddess. Huh. Not one of the best known of goddesses, but now she is becoming a so. And I think that's really wonderful as well. And anyway, I've kind of gotten off the subject of the ritual itself. We just went around and both and sang and spoke, and it was really wonderful. And then after the ritual, there were some people who decided to stay there all night, and that was kind of exciting. I couldn't have done it, unfortunately, but they did. And I think it drummed all night. It was really quite beautiful, too. Vicki, do you want to kind of fill in on that I maybe didn't?
Yeah, I think when I thought about Sekhmet and why it was so, one of the interesting things was just what you're saying, that there is so much active devotion to her and research and study into her, what little is written down about her practices from ancient Egypt. And I wondered if the popularity, such strong calling for so many of the women, that maybe that was partly because the Western magical tradition, which is, of course, where the tarot cards come from, and when I was making the Mother Peace cards with Karen Vogel in the late 1970s, we were immersed in the Western magical tradition, and so much of it comes from Egypt, but then it was popular in the medieval period in Europe, and so it was kind of, sort of like a borrowing and a kind of translation into a European form, and that's where the tarot cards emerged from. But I thought that probably we're going back to Egypt, you know, and that it makes sense, so many of us being European, of European ancestry, that would happen.
Huh. What time period is Sekhmet?
I think she's one of the earliest goddesses. You know, the Sphinx is just sort of her opposite. The Sphinx in Egypt, has a man's head and a lion's body. And she has a lion's head and a woman's body. And she is from the, you know, transition between animal and human, but also, I would say, between matriarchy and patriarchy.
Yes, definitely, because you can always tell that because her story changed. You know, in the earliest times, there wasn't any war, and she's become a war goddess, like so many of the goddesses from Middle Eastern countries from very early.
What do you mean a war goddess?
She's literally, the texts talk about her as a war goddess. That, you know, the way they make them sound sort of bloodthirsty in their stories, and she's definitely a blood goddess, but I believe very strongly that goes back to menstruation and the early pre-patriarchal traditions of where the women were priestesses, and the blood cycle linked with the moon cycles was the origin or the center of early religion, of the earliest religion from Africa, and it's our legacy all over the world.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, and the idea that men have to make war and kill people because they can't menstruate.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, that's interesting. I've always said it the other way around, that if we took back menstruation, maybe there wouldn't be such a bloodbath on the planet. But yeah,
yes, in fact, but that's why the men are killing people and drawing blood because they can't menstruate.
Hmm. Yeah,
they don't have blood that appears on its own.
And then to go back to the Western magical tradition, there are priests and priestesses from that tradition who believe that the blood, that some blood substance is necessary in rituals on this planet. And so it was Lawrence Durden Robertson who said very early in the 1970s that the first blood at the altar was women's menstrual blood.
Huh.
And it was given without a sacrifice.
Of course,
yeah.
That's the only thing that makes real sense as far as I'm concerned.
And that all blood that has been used since we stopped using women's blood at the altar is part of an ethical problem.
Huh.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wonderful. That's such a good turn of all of that.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. The blood, the menstrual blood, holds life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the magic, the mystery, you know, it's really, I believe that the menstrual cycle that human women have is actually part of, if not the center of, the so-called leap from the primate ancestor into the human species. Because we're the only primate that has it has a menstrual cycle instead of estrus or heat. And
yeah.
So that's part of our uniqueness as a species, even though we're very, very similar to chimps and bonobos.
But don't.
In that way, we're very different. We synchronized our blood cycle to the moon.
Yeah.
You know, it's a phenomenon that I think should be right at the center of science, and,
really?
And yet no one pays much attention to it.
That's true. That's absolutely true. It should be.
Yeah.
But don't dogs bleed?
Yeah, well,
when they're in heat.
Have estrus.
When
they go into heat.
Heat. Right.
So a little,
that's when they get pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, they show a little blood, and that's a sign of fertility. In the human species, it's exactly the opposite. You know, we bleed once a month for most of our adult female lives, but we're not fertile at that time. We're fertile at the opposite pole of the month.
This is very interesting.
It's really interesting to think of that in terms of Sekhmet as half lion and half human, or half, or at least the lion's head, because it sort of integrates the two points of view, doesn't it? And she has now, she's like an animal.
Yes.
That has menses.
Yes. And I bet anything, she was just one of many versions in different cultures of the dark goddess who's fierce and who's related to the menstrual pole of the female cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Sounds good.
Non-life aspect, in a sense, the regenerative function rather than the creative or fertility function as we have come to know it. She probably involved, you know, had all of that, as so many of the early goddesses did.
Yeah.
They were life, death, and regeneration.
Yeah.
Which is the menstrual cycle.
Right.
This is wonderful. Really, really rich stuff. Thank you. It's wonderful. You know, speaking in this way and speaking of drawing back memories, ancient memories, it just expands our consciousness in such a marvelous way that there's more than this world that we're looking at.
Yeah, it's the ancient goddess returning, which I think is wonderful. It's the return of matriarchy. It's the return of pre-patriarchy in a new way now. That's, I think, one of the things that Sekhmet symbolizes.
Yeah, and maybe the deeper, more hidden reason for her strong popularity at this point and her visibility.
Yeah.
Is that we need it so much.
Dear me.
Right.
We need not only the focus on life and creativity that the goddess always represents, but we need her fierceness and we need her unwillingness to accept death and destruction as the model of life, you know.
Yes, indeed. Isn't that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to, you know, I've written here, it's such a dark time right now and hard to know what to do next that might make a difference, that might turn this ship around.
Yeah.
That might awaken the patriarchal powers to simply fade away.
Maybe. Well, one of the things that, you know, that women's spirituality and goddess groups all around the world are focused on all the time is ritual and the power of both simple and elaborate rituals for bringing about the changes that we so deeply wish for. And we did so many rituals at the temple that weekend, but one that we did was spontaneous, not really planned ahead. Jen asked I don't know who, was it your idea, Jen? I think so, that there be some sort of a ritual where we ask for the stolen statue to be returned. And Lydia Rule, one of our goddess community, had done such a ritual earlier in the year. She did what she called a despacho. It's a Peruvian kind of ritual. And so Jen asked if we could do that kind of a ritual as part of our weekend of activities, and we planned it for early Sunday morning as part of the sunrise service. And we made it very simple because I had never done a despacho before, so we just sort of followed Lydia's guidelines, and we brought various substances that are said to be Sekhmet's favorites, and we shared in the circle. I just asked all the women who were present, you know, to share whatever they knew or whatever they had brought to make offerings. And so it was very simple, very basic. We used the physical substances, the cornmeal, the tobacco, the salt, some red beer. Sekhmet loves the red beer, we're told. I think that's because women, early women, created alcoholic beverages as part of the nutritional and what would you call it, the ceremonial observances. So anyway, we brought all those substances to the circle, and we made a little bundle and poured it into a hole in the ground where we mixed the earth with the ashes from our prayers that we wrote on little pieces of paper and burned, and basically just went around the circle and said what we hoped for. One woman even said out loud that she wanted whoever stole the statue to know that they were forgiven. And it just proceeded in a very simple way and very improvisational, and then we were done. And I think, was it that afternoon, Jen, that the boys called?
Yeah, I think just a few hours later,
uh-huh.
These young people that had stolen the statue called the priestess and made an appointment with her for a few days later to talk to her, and they told her when they talked to her that they had stolen the statue, and that they were so scared at the time that they destroyed the statue right after they stole it. And that's too bad, and we were sorry about that, but as it happened, we found the original mold of the statue, and we're going to make a new one. So that's all very exciting.
But, you know, it just goes to show that our sincerity and intention, as the pagans always say, the intention is everything, and your sincerity, your devotion, and that's it. That's all you need. And women are doing practices like that and rituals like that all over the world now, yeah. in on behalf of goddess, various goddess, you know, forms, I guess you would say, various forms of the goddess.
Really? I'm not aware of this at all.
Really?
No.
Well, I don't mean precisely a despacho.
No, no, but a ritual.
Goddess rituals, yeah. Well, there are styles of women. I mean, you know, it's something. In the 1980s, we did so many workshops teaching women all over the place how to do ritual, how to call in the goddesses, and so on and so on. And I think at this point, at least in the United States, but as far as I can tell in most other places as well, there's quite a strong presence of women who are having regular circles and who don't need teachers anymore. They are just fine on their own.
Wow.
So we have a deep, I was going to say underground, but it's not really so underground. It's just not at the center of our culture, but it's very active, our movement.
That's wonderful to hear. I'm not surrounded by that very much. And as far as ritual, I never do ritual in my life.
Oh, really?
No. I mean, I've had many gifts, but ritual wasn't part of it coming through. But no, and it's so interesting to hear this, and it's so reassuring.
Yes, it is. And at this point, because of all these women all over the place who've been doing rituals and goddess circles and so on, now we're starting to have goddess temples.
That's what. Oh, I can hardly wait.
Yes,
there's the original one that at least I perceive it as the original one. It was started in Orange County, but many years ago, gosh, it must be at least 15 years it's been there. And now there are others sort of modeling themselves after that one, I think. But there are several. We went and visited one such temple that just opened in Las Vegas.
What unusual places. It's really amazing.
Right. Isn't that just exactly right?
Yes. You know, I have dreamed of temples. I can look into my mind and I can see temples with beautiful fabric for walls. I mean, I know it. I've been there. It's a really wonderful, wonderful thing. And this conversation is also really wonderful. I'm so appreciative of it. And I know our listeners will be too.
Well, we got to bring it back.
Well, otherwise we don't survive.
That's right.
Well, the other thing about Lydia's doing the despacho is, I think this is really interesting that her paintings, her wonderful banners, were shipped to a destination where she was doing a presentation, and the box was taken that was sitting out with all her beautiful banners.
Right.
And they disappeared. And they offered reward and the police and everybody, and nothing happened until, I'll let somebody tell this story, how they were discovered. Some boys were playing with them, right?
That I don't know.
Yeah, they were playing with these banners in the street.
Oh, wow.
They were tossing them into the air, and somebody saw them.
Ah. Someone who had heard about the...
Yeah, probably, yes, yes.
Uh-huh. But because there was a lot of attention.
Right, and so she did the despacho, and the boys... But
and they came right back. I mean, they were found so soon after she did the ritual.
But, yeah, true. But it is also, they're young boys in both instances.
Oh, I didn't make that connection.
No, I didn't either.
And I thought that means something, surely. Are they searching for the mother, or are they longing for the mother, or, you know, who knows? But
yeah, maybe, yeah. They're paying attention to the images.
Well, it must, they're being drawn to them, it seems like.
Yeah, it does. That's interesting. And you know, Jen and I were talking after there was a lot of attention a few days after everybody on our list found out that the boys had come forward to confess about the statue, and it got to the point where it was sort of like there was so much attention. Jen said, "I think this is weird. We just did a ritual and it worked." And I said, "I think that we often don't quite believe in our own power to do these things and have have an effect. And it's awfully good for us to acknowledge that and to know that even though it's unseen power, and even though we don't always have an immediate, often we don't have an immediate response to our prayers and our rituals, still, it's wonderful to know that, of course, at a deeper level, there's some sort of communication and connection, and there's a movement. There's a movement on the invisible level. We're moving energy.
I think that we had a wonderful example of that the evening of the Sunday when we were doing our final event. That afternoon, we had a double rainbow that covered the sky right there in front of the temple, and then the full moon came up right then, too. So it was a double rainbow in the desert is a very unusual, wonderful occurrence, and we were just felt so blessed, everybody did.
Oh, I can imagine. I saw pictures, you know, you sent out these pictures, and the beautiful blue sky.
After it rained, it was really, really nice.
And the rainbows and the priestesses out in these long red gowns. It was stunning. It was stunning. You know, I look at it a little differently. Mind you, I don't do rituals, but I feel that those things are gifts from the mother. That, you know, sometimes you might ask for something and sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. But when it does, I just feel like it comes. It's a gift from the mother.
Yeah.
I mean, she did it. We didn't do it. She did it.
Right.
It's what I'm trying to say.
Well, but as a ritualist, I beg to differ. We certainly participated.
Well, I have to agree because it's right out there.
I think it's a co-creative act, as all worship probably should be.
Uh-huh.
You know, where we are connecting. We're connecting to something we can't see, but we believe is there and we can feel it and so on, you know. And you always are acting on faith when you connect anything on that level.
You bet.
You're communicating.
Bet. Yes.
Yes, right. I'm sure you both have contact information, and would you like to put that out at this time?
Sure. Go ahead, Jen.
Well, I have a website, www.gift-economy.com, and it's gift economy. Just don't forget the dash in the middle because...
And is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you can email me if you want at genvau@aol.com.
Okay. Maybe you'd like to repeat that?
genvau@aol.com.
Okay, thank you. And Vicki?
And I have the Mother Peace website that I share with Karen Vogel, who co-created the cards with me. And a lot of my activities are on there. And, you know, I would encourage people to go to the website MatriFocus, MatriFocus.com. It used to be a wonderful online magazine that featured many, many, many women in women's spirituality and goddess work. It's MatriFocus, MatriFocus.com. I have a Facebook site. It's a professional site. I don't do friends, but I post things fairly often, have a little communication with my people that are on that site.
So if you're doing a workshop or presenting something?
Definitely.
Would you ever consider coming up here?
Oh, of course. I travel all the time to teach.
Oh, you
I'm
do?
I go to Italy where I
well,
teach.
Well, I know Italy, but this is Mendocino.
Well, yeah, I'd love to come to Mendocino. I used to do that a lot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. You know, I've been teaching in a university program for so long now, a couple of decades, and I'm not doing that anymore. It went so corporate, I just couldn't continue. So I'm, again, looking for that kind of work. I'd love to talk to you about that.
All right, let's do that. Let's do that for sure. Amelia, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Tell me, where do you live?
I live between Italy and Texas, just like my mom. We're traveling lately, going back and forth. I personally don't have a website, but...
Yeah, are you involved in the goddess work?
I did enjoy going to the celebration, and I thought that the rituals were very intense and very soft at the same time. I learned a lot about Sekhmet, and that was nice.
Well, I'm sure it was wonderful for your mother to have you there, too. Really special.
Yeah, it was. It was really great.
Very special.
Yeah, I felt honored to be there.
The pictures looked just beautiful, and it must have been, you must have all felt like you were in an altered state of consciousness.
Yeah, I think we all were.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I bet you were, really. How many people were there?
Well, the ritual during the night, like a 40 or 50.
The ritual on Saturday night was all women. The ritual on Sunday was open to men and women, which is also a wonderful thing.
Well, golly, I can't thank you all enough. This has been such a rich time together.
Yeah, thank you, Janie. That's really good of you to have us.
It's wonderful.
It just seemed the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish everybody, you know, could have been there. I wish, and everybody that wanted to could have come. But actually, if you're traveling in Nevada and you want to go to the temple, it's there and open. You need to ask the priestess who lives on the on that land. Mm-hmm. You need to ask her if it's okay to go in, but it's open to the public.
Well, that's a wonderful gift for everyone.
Yeah, it's a great place to go because you can sit there in this place of peace and just think about peace to all of those war installations that are around it.
Right. Was it terribly hot?
It was hot, but in the evening it gets cooler.
And it rained also, which was a blessing.
Yeah.
That's what made that clear sky and the beautiful
rainbows,
yes. Well, it's just been such fun. It's wonderful. I wish we could do this more.
Very nice to be more than just one person being interviewed.
It is.
Yeah.
The back and forth.
Well, I send you much love and await our next event.
Yes.
Love to you and to Vicki. And
thank you, Jenny, for having us.
It was nice to be able to meet you on the airwaves too, Amelia. Very sweet.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create.